This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. My apologies for no Leah Hextall today. She had some things going on, so we're going to get back to her coming up in January. And that's what I wanted to announce here on Game Misconduct because of vacation and holidays. This will be the last Game Misconduct until we get back to work and everything in January. So I don't want to keep hitting missing. I'm not working and trying to figure out ways to get it recorded. So we'll just take a break for the holidays and we'll come back with you probably somewhere around January 2nd, January 3rd. Follow me on Twitter if you want to know exactly when the date will be when we return. Hopefully everybody has a great holiday season. But I felt the need to get a podcast in here today. We had one yesterday with EJ and it was great. But Pete DeBoer gets fired by the San Jose Sharks. And I can't say that it comes at any kind of surprise because they so underachieved in the three-game losing streak in which they've been outscored 15-3. And they let everybody go. Dave Barr is gone. Johan Hedberg is gone. And I guess you clean house, and that's probably the way it's supposed to be. Let the new coach come in here, whoever that may be. If it's going to be Bob Bugner for the foreseeable future, let him be able to hire his own guys. And Bugner did a great job in Florida before the bottom dropped out there. But, you know, Doug Wilson is a guy that has been a general manager there forever. He was an original Shark. But when does it fall on the GM? When does it fall on the guy that selects the talent? It's so easy to let go of coaches and trade players away. But eventually it's got to come back to, well, if you don't like the team and you hired the coaches and you are the one that acquires the players, when does he fall on the sword? And maybe this will be the last chance for him as well. This team went to a Stanley Cup final in 2016, lost in six games to Pittsburgh. This is a team that has had opportunities in the postseason last year, the miracle run against Vegas and all that, and not losing until stumbling against the team that won the Stanley Cup. So it's not like they've been miserable and haven't made the playoffs in decades, but fact is they have underachieved this year. And again, I'm not surprised by the coach, but I just wonder when a general manager has been there for a long time, if you're not happy with the direction of the team, is it always the coach? When does the general manager get the one that gets called on the carpet? And maybe if this doesn't work out with whoever the long-term hire is going to be, and if this firing doesn't spread that cheer and get the team fired up, maybe that will be what ends up happening with him. But Pete DeBoer is a good guy. He's a good coach. Did pretty well in Florida. Went to a Stanley Cup final with the Devils. Went to a Stanley Cup final with the San Jose Sharks. Did not win a ring, but he's out. The other thing that I found interesting about the firing of Pete DeBoer, which is kind of really a shame right now with what we're going through with the code of conduct, is that anytime a coach gets fired, we now have to disclaimer it by saying, well, he was fired for hockey reasons, okay? He didn't do anything in the past. He didn't kick a player. He didn't say anything racially. I mean, so anytime somebody gets fired, now you've got to let the public know that it's not because of that reason. And I just found that interesting as I was scouring through articles and preparing for this podcast that on more than one occasion that popped up where, hey, this is not a situation with the code of conduct. So crazy stuff happening there. Some games last night of interest, and two of them were great. Capitals and Bruins, national television, two of the best teams in the NHL. And when the dust settles, the Capitals win again as they pick up the 3-2 win. And TJ Oshie scores twice as they get the victory. It's 12th and 13th of the season. The goals came in the second period. One came on the power play. John Carlson ends up getting the winner early in the third period, snapping the 2-2 tie, his 12th goal of the year. Carlson also assisted on the first Oshie goal. So here's John Carlson now, as we've played 33 games, has 45 points. So you do the math there. This is a guy that's on his way to having well over 100 points. Now, what's the significance of that? Well, the significance of it is that we have not had a 100-point defenseman since Brian Leetch in 1991, okay? And we are going to be concluding the 19-20-20 season this year. So, you know, it's been a long time where you're going on nearly 30 years the last time a defenseman has accumulated 100 points. Now, he hasn't done it yet, but 45 points in 33 games tells you he's on pace to do it. And even though Dougie Hamilton's having a great year on defense, that it's going to be hard to believe that it's not going to be John Carlson that's going to walk away with the Norris Trophy and defeat. David Pastrnak picked up goal number 26 on the season, so that was a fun game. Montreal Canadiens beat the Ottawa Senators 3-2 in overtime, so the Sens do earn a point. Game-winning goal off the stick of Ben Sherratt, who's been a good pickup for the Montreal Canadiens, his fourth goal of the year. And somebody mentioned this to me on Twitter, and it's just interesting. When you're watching this game, you're seeing Primo in goal. Of course, Keith Primo's son. You see Tkachuk score a goal, his 11th of the year. Of course, Brady Tkachuk is the son of Keith Tkachuk. And you've got Ty Domi playing for the Montreal Canadiens son. Max Domi, the son of Ty Domi, that you're really seeing a lot of good second-generation players in the National Hockey League now, and this game is full of them. And give the Ottawa Senators a lot of credit. This is not a great team by any stretch, but they come to play every single night. They're a thorn in team sides. They're 13-17-2. But that's a team that if you think you can just show up and beat them, you're going to be sadly mistaken. Colorado? They get a win. First team in the Western Conference to get to a 20-win season as they get two goals from Rantanen. So he's back and he's healthy and he's performing so far this season. He has been terrific. Claude Giroux scores at 14:48, the third period, to avoid the shutout as the Avalanche now, as they get healthy. Landeskog came back recently, has scored. This is a very, very good hockey team that is going to be very dangerous in the Western Conference. Games coming up tonight. You got the Predators and the Sabres from Buffalo. Sabres starting to turn things around. Just came off a big win over St. Louis. Predators were the last team Pete DeBoer faced with the San Jose Sharks. So that should be a fun game. Lightning and the Bruins. Maybe not the cachet that we saw last year when these two teams hooked up during the regular season, but still, Lightning starting to get a little bit better here. Bruins also a 20-win team, so that should be fun. Second of back-to-backs for Boston, so that could be a really tough spot in Tampa for the Bruins. Islanders and the Panthers from Florida, that should be fun. Islanders also a 20-win team. Blue Jackets and the Penguins. Blue Jackets trying to feed off that great win over the Washington Capitals earlier in the week. Penguins trying to get things going in this Metropolitan Division. The Jets and the Detroit Red Wings, I mean, things have gone really bad and really sideways for the Detroit Red Wings. This is probably, if not definitely, the worst team in the National Hockey League. They've lost 10 consecutive games. Just an unbelievable poor start to their season. 7-22-3, minus 62 goal differential, which is by far the worst in the NHL. Second worst in the NHL goal differential-wise. You've got to go to the New Jersey Devils at minus 37. I mean, so they almost doubled them up in that category. They're in full rebuild, but at some point, you want to see some results. And right now, 10 consecutive losses, all in regulation for the Red Wings. And then you've got the Jets. So this has got to be 2 points for them at 19-10-2. But it's interesting, Detroit actually has a win over Boston Bruins, which is crazy. Golden Knights, after that hiccup against the Rangers, played much better in their next game, taking on the Blues. That should be a lot of fun. That could be a playoff preview for sure. That could be a conference final preview when it's all said and done. Oilers and the Wild from Minnesota. Again, Edmonton, 53 points apiece for Draisaitl and McDavid. I mean, you're talking about 106 points from two players, and we're only 30-some-odd games into the season. I mean, it's unbelievable. Those two guys are going to combine for like 225 points. We may see 200-point scorers on the same team for the first time in a while. Maple Leafs and Flames, can anybody cool down the Flames? Six consecutive wins for them since the Bill Peters firing. They've been on fire, no pun intended. Blackhawks and the Coyotes. Coyotes have to try to get some scoring from somebody other than Phil Kessel, right? And otherwise, they're just really relying on their goaltending right now. They're 18-11-4, off to a good start, but they're going to have to try to find some guys that can score there. Hurricanes and Canucks from Vancouver. Aho coming off a two-goal performance back on Tuesday. Kings and the Ducks from Anaheim. Kings coming off a win over the Rangers, so that should be a good one. That's always a good Southern California rivalry, although the Kings are brutal on the road, just two wins this season. And the Rangers will play game three of their four-game Western swing. They'll be in San Jose to take on the Sharks, who are under NHL 500. Bob Bugner takes over as the head coach, and we'll see if that sparks the Sharks here. And the Rangers, we talked about it with EJ yesterday, shoot the puck, and that just seems to be a mantra that's just not as sticking in anybody's head there. And, you know, they've got to be careful, the Rangers. A terrific game on Sunday. I called the game from Vegas, a 5-0 win. You know, you lose tonight against the Sharks, who've actually been pretty good at home, and you're going to the Ducks to try to salvage the road trip. The last thing you want to do is go out west and just get two of a possible 6 points. So if they get the win against the Sharks, you can't really complain about getting four of a possible six for sure. I mean, excuse of a possible eight. But you definitely don't want to get two of a possible eight, so this becomes a pretty big game tonight. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct, as we close out this 2019 portion of the podcast. And let's go to Ozzy. He says, hey, Don, so in your expert opinion, would you take the over or under for coaching changes at 7, Pete, in Nashville being the wild card? And you're right. If Nashville continues to struggle, Laviolette can go. I mean, I'm going to take the over. Remember, it was a couple of years ago. We technically did not see a coach fired during the course of the regular season. I think Alain Vigneault was fired on the last day of the season a couple of years ago by the Rangers. But that was because it was at the end of the Rangers season, and there was a Sunday game only because there was that makeup game between the Bruins and the Panthers, if you remember. So I look at that as being a firing at the end of the season. But what happens is then you just see a bunch of coaches get let go. Expectations are very high for a lot of teams. It's easy to fire the coach. So with that going on and the code of conduct situation, I think you'd be silly to take the under. And I think that Peter Laviolette could be the next axe to fall if Nashville doesn't start getting some traction here. All right, Aaron says the Rangers power play had much more success with Panarin on his off wing. He was a threat to shoot it or pass it. Now that Zibanejad came back, they put him in that spot and moved Panarin to the right circle where he hasn't been as effective. How can they fix this? Well, it's an interesting dilemma for sure. But I think it'll figure itself out a couple of different ways. What might end up happening is splitting those guys and putting them on different units. You can do that. Panarin is still a threat anywhere, but they're just working that out. But I think having Panarin and Zibanejad, they work so well together 5-on-5, and they're going to wait and see how that ends up playing itself out. Troy says, a couple of weeks ago, it was brought up that Fleury was overshadowed by his teammates in Pittsburgh, but I'd like to also suggest that he has been overshadowed by his peers. At the start of his career, it was Brodeur and Luongo. After that time, it became Lundqvist and Price. Well, I will say this about Fleury. The biggest problem is that he had was that he went through the concussion, end up losing his job to Murray in Pittsburgh. Murray wins a cup. So it kind of looked like Fleury was an afterthought, not just because of the stars on his team like Malkin, like Crosby, Letang, and all that. It just, he lost his job. So it looked like he was done. Then he goes to Vegas and he becomes a major part of that team going to the final. But if you remember, he got hurt in that season. So to me, it's really been about injury. He caught the tail end of Brodeur's career in Luongo. To say he's overshadowed by Lundqvist, I guess, because obviously in 2014, Lundqvist beat him. But Fleury's had his opportunities too. I don't think he's been overshadowed by anybody. I just think it's the injuries that have really put him in the situation that he's in. But he's healthy now. He's playing on a really good team. I think he will eventually pass Lundqvist. Lundqvist has been stuck on 456. What's Fleury up to now? 451, 452. So eventually he's going to move into the top five and pass Lundqvist. So I think injuries more than anything has hurt Marc-Andre Fleury. Tom says, hey, Don, World Juniors are 2 weeks away. Any players we should keep an eye on? And how can we get people in the United States more interested? This is my favorite tournament other than the Olympics when NHLers go and showcase lots of young talent. Well, I think it gets overshadowed because it's during the Christmas holiday. That's always a bit of a problem. I'll get you some names. I'm not as in tune with the younger players, and we didn't have Leon today because, again, she had some scheduling conflicts and bring it up with EJ. But I think the biggest problem, Tom, is that this is during the Christmas holiday. It's not on a major network. I mean, ESPN used to have it back in the day. A lot of the games are on the NHL network. And it's also going up against other NHL games, too. I think the NHL draft is exciting. It just doesn't seem to get as much of attention. But I think you make a great point. It's always a great tournament. It's always a lot of fun to watch these young guys play. So I'm looking forward to it, too. Chris says, not sure if you talked about it before, but what do you think of the situation with Dallas? Super weird to fire a coach when they did. It's not super weird if you did something bad, and we're still trying to find out the information. EJ yesterday suggested that whatever incident had taken place, it had taken place over last weekend, and the firing was swift. Not knowing what he did, it's hard really to judge it, but it does sound like it's pretty bad. Chris says, due to the age of the Sharks' core, their place in the division, currently sixth, and now the firing of DeBoer, do you think Doug Wilson will proceed with a rebuild? You know, we'll see. Marlowe, Thornton coming down to the end of their careers here. They need goaltending. You know, Pavelski's gone. Yeah, it might be time to do that. It really might. But obviously we live in a world where you have players and big contracts. You know, Burns is there, that they want to take advantage of the stars that they have. But you're right. If it kind of peters out here and the coaching change doesn't work, yeah, I mean, what else are you going to do here? Because players are starting to get a little long in the tooth for sure. Brendan says, hey, Don, love the podcast. After firing Hines, who would be a good coach for the Devils to hire? It's a great question. I don't think Babcock works because there seems to be this, he doesn't work good with young players and the Devils are just filled with young players. I'm not really sure. Would they even think of going back to Pete DeBoer? You know, would they wait till the offseason? Would they try to bring in a John Tortorella if he gets let go in Columbus? Would they try to bring in a Peter Laviolette if he gets let go by Nashville? I'm not really sure how to really look at that. I do think the Devils need somebody with a little bit of name value. I mean, and maybe Nazardine does a good job and gets thrown into the mix, but so far they haven't won since he's coached there. It's a great question. I'm not really sure what the answer is, and I really hadn't heard too many rumblings on who could be a possible coach. Sean brought up, I told you I saw the tweet and I want to give you some credit. He said the Canadian Senators game last Wednesday night had Domi, Tkachuk, Primo. Are we in the golden age of second generation players? We are. So many good players. You know, Brendan Lemieux playing, Claude Lemieux's son with the New York Rangers. I mean, just a slew of guys. It's really ridiculous. I can't remember a time where we've seen so many former players' kids getting a chance to play. Tim says, summer of 11, deaths of Bugard, Bielak, and Rippon, was a far darker time for hockey than the current controversy of these coaches, Peters, Babcock, etc. The league changed for the better back then, and I believe it will change for the better now. Well said, Tim. Farr says DeBoer had more success with the Sharks head coach than any before him, but he still wasn't able to get the offense rolling without Pavs, and Bugar is more of a defensive first coach. Does San Jose have a chance to turn this season around a la 16 Pens, 19 Blues? Well, that's the theme, right? That there's still time. We're talking about 50-plus games for some of these teams. And we saw what the Blues did in January, being the worst team in the league and going on and winning the Stanley Cup. And a lot of that had to do with the firing of Yo. And then you make the coaching change and all of a sudden everybody just, you know, Berube comes in, and the next thing you know, they're winning a Stanley Cup. So that's always going to be there. I don't think it's something to rely on, Forrest, but I think it always seems to be there as, hey, why not? Maybe we can be the St. Louis Blues of this year. But I do think there is plenty of time and plenty of talent on the team to turn it around. And finally, Ari says, hey, Don, I know you love three-on-three overtime, but don't you think it would be better with a backcourt violation type rule? That's a great analogy. We do see where guys go into the zone, they're front, they want to leave the zone, play keep away. That's a great point. I've seen a lot of games end where you lose the opening faceoff in overtime, you never touch the puck, and you lose the game. That would be very interesting. It would almost be similar to, you know, almost guaranteeing a possession of the NFL where if you don't allow a touchdown, you get your own chance. Yeah, I'd like to see something like that. That's a great idea. Do you not allow them? Is the red line the line of demarcation that, like, once you're in the zone, if you leave it, do you blow the whistle? I think that, Ari, I'm going to bring that up to some people around the NHL and see if it gains any traction, but that seems to be a tremendous idea. I love three on three, but this idea sometimes of playing keep away does seem to just really aggravate me to no end. All right, listen, there's so many people that listen to this podcast. Whenever I go to Ranger games, I'm out on the road, people approach me, they love it, and I think it's fantastic that you guys have such a good time with the podcast, because I have such a great time doing it as well. We're going to be back in January. We're going to take some time off during the Christmas and holiday break. Listen, guys, enjoy it. Whatever you celebrate, celebrate it, have a good time, make hockey a part of it. Enjoy this time of the season. It's always so great. And just know that there's somebody out there that appreciates you, because if you take the time to listen to this podcast, it means the world to me. It really does. So enjoy your holiday. We'll be back with you in January. I'll give you the specific date on Twitter, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. And even though the podcast won't be up until then, doesn't mean you can't get in touch with me. So if you want to have any questions, comments, whatever, you can always get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. I'll still be doing some of the Michael Kay Show, although I'll be away. I'll be doing Ranger games. I'm going to be in Anaheim coming up on Saturday. I'm going to be calling the Rangers Leafs at Madison Square Garden next Friday. Next Saturday, I'll be home against Carolina the following Saturday. I'm doing a ton of games, okay? I think the Leaf game at the Garden on Friday, and then the following Saturday will be in Toronto. So maybe I'll see you on the road. Maybe I'll see you on Twitter, whatever. Enjoy your holidays. This was the Thursday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.